How's that coffee?
Oh, it's great.
Mine is really tasty too.
Oh, it's something about a Sunday morning.
Welcome back, everyone. We're in a bit of a time travel. We're recording this a week before it publishes. So don't laugh at us if we make any comments that are deemed completely silly based on Guild Week that's about to happen.
Or if, Bradley Cooper has come out in an acceptance speech, we don't know that yet. So, I mean, I feel we do kind of know that, but we don't know that yet.
When you hear this, you will have just made it through Guild Week. The DGA, the costumers, the cinematographers, everybody's announcing their picks, i.e., what they want to be nominated for Best Picture, as we've discovered based on Slumdog Millionaire's costume nomination.
Wow, I still not over that one, huh?
no. So, and Golden Globes are this weekend, of course, when you're hearing this. Sadly, we will not have a podcast about the Golden Globes.
The Golden Globes sort of are a podcast.
Yes.
Rambling and silly.
And you'll hear all of our comments on our live blogs and/or recaps.
Yeah, there'll be plenty from all of us about the Golden Globes.
And they are sort of like a Twitter chat among the HFPA. Like, that bitch didn't pay us enough money. I know, that's why I voted for Sharon. Well, me too.
Who's Sharon? Which Sharon?
Stone. I tell
Oh.
Sharon Stone.
You
Even if
guys.
I just say her, or she, you should assume I mean Sharon Stone.
Okay, fair enough.
You guys, this very day, Sharon Stone is hosting a party for the Butler in LA. The
Wow, I
very day that
love
we're
that.
recording this.
Why aren't we there?
Well,
Where's my invite?
I was invited, but it's all the way in LA, so I cannot make it.
I'm doing coke on my yacht, which is called the Sharon, so that's another
Do you think Sharon Stone saw The Wolf of Wall Street, and why isn't she hosting a party for that?
Oh, I'm pretty sure she watched Margot Robbie like a cat during The Wolf of Wall Street. It's like, yeah, I recognize some of this. Like, you're cool, it's cool.
One of us won a Golden Globe and one of us won't be. And Sharon's
Right.
fine with that.
She
You look
understands.
good
She doesn't.
naked, but show me the mock turtleneck. Okay.
Show me the t-shirt that gets best dress list.
Exactly.
Or the Gap. Wasn't it a Gap t-shirt or
It was
something?
a Gap mock turtleneck. We're
Oh, that's
thinking of the
right.
same, akin to the Shroud of Turin.
We're thinking of the same, but of course,
But didn't she also do
you
like a
have
men's
more
button down one
photographic
time?
memory.
The
Yes, she
button
did.
down was amazing.
Yeah.
Again, I think we all knew when we logged back on that Sharon Stone would be the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She'd be our spirit guide for this podcast.
Absolutely. She always is.
But as we begin, I just wanted to Joe and Nick, you guys were cracking me up on Twitter the other day with joking about couples made from Oscar-winning lineups.
Wasn't me,
Oh.
but I'm glad I entertained you.
Oh no,
I know Joe definitely started it. I don't know
I actually
who
don't
you
know what you're
started,
talking
but I
about.
did start it.
Oh, I
Joe,
could have sworn you responded to that. I'm sorry.
Joe,
So,
fill Nick in.
well,
Sure.
so
I know.
yeah, tell him what the whole genesis of it was.
So apparently there's this, I guess it's just a rumor now,
Yeah.
that Charlize Theron and Sean Penn are dating. And
Oh, I can now
so,
see why you thought I was involved. Yes.
yes, see? Yes. But now I can also see why you may have like spiritually boycotted even without realizing
I've been sharing him generously for many years.
it. And but so my immediate reaction was just like, this is weird, but if it means that like we're gonna see a rash of same year best actor, best actress winners coupled up, I could be okay with that.
Yeah.
If only for the eventual Kathy Bates, Jeremy Irons
Torrid
torrid romance.
affair.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, look at the penance that Gwyneth has been doing for that Benigni thing. She hasn't even allowed herself to eat for like 15 years.
So to begin, I wanted to see if you guys your dream couple from any best any like it can even be supporting with a lead. Ooh, you
Oh,
could
wait,
go there.
what? Oh, okay. You're changing the rules now.
Is that like a top bottom thing or
Yeah, those power dynamics are too unstable for the
Yeah, all of a
relationship
sudden
to
we're opening
last.
this up to same-sex stuff. Like, this is
Oh, well,
crazy.
there's another option. Let's begin. Well, Joe, since you started the thread, Joe Reed from The Wire, who's your dream couple?
Well, I've been sort of obsessing of it since I mentioned it, but like Robert Duvall and Shirley MacLaine would like end up murdering each other somehow, right? Like
Yes.
that would actually happen.
Oh, wait, we're like the sweep of history is what we're dealing
with. Yeah,
yeah. Oh, my God. Okay.
No.
I'm just going to throw one out there, though I don't think it's my choice. When Coming Home won both Best Actor and Best Actress, and John Voight and Jane Fonda played lovers, maybe if they'd really been lovers, we could do something about John Voight's politics.
Oh, maybe. Maybe true. And then Jane Fonda could have been Angelina Jolie's stepmother.
Now you're rewriting history. Like,
well, that's just a movie I want to see now.
Well, there are several scenes in that movie that leave open the possibility that they were actually lovers.
That's true.
That was some pretty intense simulation happening.
Yes. And for anybody who hasn't seen that movie, get to it. It's so good.
I think I want Meryl Streep and Jessica Lange to be a mad love item in 1982, both because it means maybe they could move in together, and then Jessica Lange could be near the Best Actress Oscar that she also deserved. Also, she could be the Sally in The Hours 20 years later, which I would like to see Jessica Lange do. The lesbian lover who's been slightly marginalized, but who's got a whole other thing
the
going.
The Allison Janney part, right?
You guys have to go.
I love this recasting.
I'm going to talk to you guys later.
You got some writing to do?
Yeah.
Some fan fiction.
That's basically all this is. Like, right. This is just culturally sanctioned by us fan fiction.
So, Katie?
I went back a while, and then I decided that Holly Hunter and Tom Hanks from 1993 would be... I basically just want them to be my parents, maybe?
Oh,
but that
nice.
Seems awesome. And anything that brings Holly Hunter... Like, if that means Holly Hunter gets the late career that Tom Hanks has had somehow by the power of association, then I'm all for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they would be good for each other.
Right?
They'd be surprisingly good for each other.
I'm into Rita Wilson and that marriage in general, so I wish no ill toward them, but I do think that they would be good together.
Bonafide.
She would have probably not produced a child like Chet Hayes, though. So.
No, what a world we'd be in without Chet Hayes.
Oh, Lord.
The other thing that I kept thinking about, but she didn't win. I wish that Joan Crawford had won a million Oscars just so I could pair her with everyone and she could just slap them around.
I think Joan kind of took care of the pairing and the slapping. I think you got your wish in spades.
So what was your pick?
Actually, I was just going to be Joan Crawford slapping Ray Milland around because that performance bugs the shit out of me. I'm just saying.
Step right up. We've got your Sharon Stone and Ray Milan jokes.
Oh, by now,
up on a cold day.
By now, people know. They know to expect that stuff. They tuned in for Oscar predictions, and they got Sharon Stone.
I just feel like we should update our marquee every week. It's what the theaters do. This is the weird-ass shit we're handing out this week. So about the Golden Globes.
Although, since I did change the rules to supporting with lead, I feel like I need to rethink all of this. So
no.
It's really just too much to handle at
That's
one point.
That's a paradigm shift. And also same-sex pairing, that opens it up.
I know. Like, we're going to have to revisit this at some point.
I'm just going to be thinking of nothing but, like, I'm sorry.
Well, if we go with my 1993 year, that puts Tom Hanks and Tommy Lee Jones together, which I don't think we actually want. So let's think this through before we...
But guys, Emma Thompson and Marissa Tomei would be adorable.
Oh my God.
Just adorable.
I would see that version of The Hours.
I just got to go with Nick's, though. I love the idea of Meryl and Jessica.
Yeah,
since they were always paired anyways, spiritually.
Yeah. And we have that picture from Oscar night of them with their arms around each other, so I just think a lot's ready to make it all happen. I think my last place choice is F. Murray Abraham with Peggy Ashcroft. The basement.
I just feel like a Meryl Streep Jessica Lange pairing would be the thing that finally causes Glenn Close to go dark. In that very sort of beautiful creature's witch way, where like, don't let anything too bad happen or else she'll just go dark, and that's the thing that happens.
I feel like we've just given Ryan Murphy too many ideas for the next season.
Yes! I would start watching that show if it involved Jessica Lange and Meryl Streep and witch Glenn Close.
It almost does,
yeah. I was going to say, Angela Bassett, Kathy Bates, and Jessica Lange. It's almost there.
Yeah.
Okay, so that was fun. So this is our Oscar nominations preamble festival.
Woohoo!
I don't know that predictions are the right way to go, because I feel like that would take us hours.
Yeah.
But
fashion picks?
Yeah. Or realistic hopes?
Yes. Maybe that's a good idea.
Just feelings?
just dreams? Aspirations?
Insecurities? Yeah, no, let's get them all out there. Let's do it. Is there any possible way that James Franco ends up with a nomination for Spring Breakers is my question.
I would say no.
I would also say no, as much as I think that would be more interesting than the rest of that category, probably.
Like, if I couldn't watch Drive, I think they're probably not watching Spring Breakers.
Right.
I think that's true, too. I don't even think I want it to happen. I just feel like that's the anarchy pick that I feel like seems to be popping up more and more.
Well, one thing I do want to say about that, it does seem like those things can only happen in weak years for a particular category, and I don't recall a worse year for supporting actor.
Wow, really?
Yeah, because almost every, like, half the people are getting nominated, two of the people that will probably get nominated are lead roles, and...
That'd be Daniel Brühl and...
Barkhad Abdi.
Oh. Not Jared Leto?
I don't think he's a lead.
Okay.
I think Bradley Cooper is, though.
Oh, yeah.
But I think if it didn't happen with Nicole Kidman and Paperboy, which I'm assuming more of them watched than Spring Breakers, and she got more precursor support. I know that's a dirty word, precursor.
It's a helpful word.
I feel like it's a helpful word. I'm fine with it.
But I don't know. I just think if it doesn't happen, even when all the cards are lining up for it to happen with something really outre, it's hard to imagine it happening.
Yeah.
When there's been like very little mainstream support, there's only been like a couple critics groups, you know.
It would be a full-on American History X if that happened, right? Like, that's the most recent thing I can think of that even.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in that case, like, he hadn't really been. Oh, no, he had been nominated before. I'm sorry.
He had been nominated once before, yeah.
Right.
So he also didn't have, you know, critics' awards. Well, whatever. I guess it could happen. Mm. I don't think it's as bad a race as, I mean, like, that 2009 race.
The 2005 race is the one I always remember as being, like...
Oh, it was like a sample sale, yeah.
I did not enjoy it.
No, I don't, like, I should amend. I don't think supporting actor, I don't think the performances are bad at all. I'm just saying, like, there isn't, like, the bench is not deep at all. Like, when I'm trying to make my own nominations, I can't even come up with 12. And usually I have trouble, like, narrowing it down from 12.
I see what you mean.
Yeah.
And there's just, like, nothing that's really super impressive, I think, except for the stuff that's in conversation, you know?
And James Franco.
And James Franco.
I mean, there's James Gandolfini, who's probably not going to quite make the cut, who's really good, although that's a lead. I guess that would make you mad because that's a lead performance. Mm-hmm.
I'm okay with that. Like, I've been thinking about it. There's a lot of the movie that he's not in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm okay. I'm sticking with him and supporting, and I'm...
You think he's going to make it in there?
No, I mean for myself. And
oh, I see.
And I'm not going to slap myself on the wrist for it. I think I'll be fine with it.
Thank you for not punishing yourself.
I honestly think Will Forte makes it, just because I feel like the Academy demographic is going to go for Nebraska pretty big.
Yeah, he could be a mini driver pretty easily. But
yeah.
Was Nebraska in the PGA nominees?
It was, yes.
Oh, yeah.
It does. That movie has been stronger than I ever really would have expected. Like, I feel like I've been constantly underestimating it, even after I saw it and liked it. It just keeps coming back in there really strong. Mm.
So one thing, you know, we've probably discussed the acting awards ad nauseum, but any other than supporting actor, which oddly enough, even though it's weak, has a lot of little like things to discuss about it. Any other feelings about the other three acting categories quickly?
Well, we talked a little bit about Emma Thompson and Saving Mr. Banks last week, and Nathaniel, you and I both think she's still in there. But, I mean, Meryl Streep and August Osage County, since that movie seems to be kind of falling apart, do you guys see anything happening to this list of five previous winners?
I kind of hope something does, just because I'm not crazy about Bullock or Thompson, and not even really Dench, I guess. So I would, and like the things that seem just outside, like Amy Adams, I really like so much. Even though I don't think any of those women I just named are the ones who would drop out, I guess it probably would be Streep, who is probably my favorite in the category. So I'm conflicted.
Mm.
Yeah, I feel like Amy Adams is the one to do it, if anybody, but I feel like probably not. Even though I do feel like American Hustle is going to show up pretty well. Maybe not as well as some people are expecting.
But it could be the nomination leader. Well, no, Gravity will probably be.
Although, you don't think with all those with all the acting potentials for American Hustle that it could pop up in there a lot?
But American Hustle could end up with as few as one nominee.
I feel like Bradley is 10.
Well, right. But I mean in the acting categories. Like, I feel like it could just be Jennifer Lawrence. Like, I don't think Bradley Cooper is as locked in there.
No.
Best Actress really does seem to have firmed up. And I know, I'm with Nick in that, like, I would probably bump out... I would bump out Emma Thompson and Judi Dench, I think, for sure, even though I, like, it sort of pains me to even say it, because I love those two as actresses so much. But I'm fine, I think, with having maybe just for 1 year, like, this sort of entrenched class of really great actresses all over 40, like... Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well,
it's like our best and brightest. It's like we're sending an all-star team to the Olympics.
So you guys, I don't know if you guys remember when I did that thing about the oldest best actress lineups ever.
Yeah.
But I have done the math, and even if one of these five is jettisoned for Adele Exarchopoulos, who is very young, it's still going to be the oldest lineup ever.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's cool. I feel like Amy Adams, I mean, American Hustle's made a lot of money. Like, it's doing really, really well. And I do wonder if it's just going to pop up. And also then if Amy Adams does manage to sneak in there, if she can just somehow win the whole thing.
Well, the only winner among, or the only non-winner among four winners is...
Yeah.
It can be an attractive thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
She, too, could come in second to Kate Blanchett.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I feel like that is true. I feel like it's not the same as last year, where, like, I honestly do feel like if DiCaprio had been nominated in supporting actor, he would have won.
Oh, yeah.
Because there was just, like, no other narrative there.
When, no one,
like,
else seemed to care that they were even nominated. Though.
Yeah, like, yeah, Cate Blanchett is still winning this. Like, it's true.
So how are we feeling about Best Actor, since it's still fairly tight?
I think this is the most interesting race we've got in terms of full nomination.
And even who could win, though I think Bruce Dern is in the lead now.
I think so, too. But I honestly, like, I don't think Oscar Isaac's going to get nominated. But if he did, I wouldn't be shocked. Like, there's so much...
And he's so great in that
movie. ...affection for him. Yeah. And he's so, like, legitimately good. I don't think Christian Bale's going to get nominated. But all of a sudden, if they really go for Hustle in a big way, he could. Like...
Yeah.
I don't know. This is 10 contenders, honestly. Like... And when was, like, I don't know, I think that's fairly exciting.
Do you think it's, I think it's Dern and Ejiofor are probably the only people I think couldn't be knocked out. Do you guys see anyone else who's, like, definitely, definitely in there?
I would be surprised if McConaughey got knocked out, but
yeah.
Not Ford.
Yeah, those are the three I think that are probably safe, but when things are this tight, you just never know who's safe.
It's crazy that Tom Hanks gives his best performance in, like, decades and is not a guaranteed, and like in a movie that did really well.
Yeah,
that has all the ingredients. It's beloved actor, solid crowd pleaser of a movie that made a bunch of money, right, Captain Phillips?
Yeah, it crossed $100 million.
Like probable best picture nominee, possible best director nominee, and like you wouldn't think that Tom Hanks would be the actor that could be sort of vulnerable with all of those ingredients, and yet it's such a strong year.
Hooray for Best Actor, which often is not this exciting.
Yeah.
So do we have any feelings about... Let's talk about something we don't talk about. Cinematography.
Yes.
Now, obviously, given... You know, I've written about this before, but given the history of this category, now belongs to visual effects. Gravity is obviously the front runner. But who else do you think is going to be in here? Like, I'm currently predicting The Grandmaster, which is probably a risky prediction, but I'm thinking enough people are watching it.
You're thinking it's going to get one of those Black Dahlia-style, like, where did it come from?
Well, and also, the categories that are nicest to foreign films tend to be cinematography and costumes.
Yeah.
They're
arguably nicer to them than the foreign film category is.
So any predictions for cinematography? Or any feelings about it?
I mean, I think 12 Years a Slave is definitely have to be in there. Like, that seems like a pretty safe prediction for me in many of these categories. Mm-hmm. And also, the cinematography is beautiful. I think that makes perfect sense. And also, Inside Llewyn Davis. I would hope that would...
yeah, I don't think that's missing. Too.
Yeah, I hope that's an easy sell.
I think your top four, Nathaniel, which I'm just looking at right now, is Gravity, Llewyn Davis, Prisoners, and 12 Years a Slave. Mm-hmm. Creel, pretty safe to me. And I think that's cool about Prisoners, that seems to hold on in people's minds for the photography, even when the movie hasn't quite latched in other places.
Yeah. The photography.
I know I'm an asshole. I know I totally get it. I really don't want Nebraska to be nominated specifically here. I just think that often movies that are in black and white get kind of a big bump from just being in black and white at this point. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't get what was special about those images, but I can't figure out, maybe Captain Phillips, if they don't mind that Barry Aykroyd is verging on repeating himself, but it was an incredibly compelling.
Yeah, I thought he did very good work, honestly, on that.
I just don't know what else goes in instead.
And also, like, I mean, this week might change some of this, of course, with the guilds, as we mentioned, but what do you guys think about costume design? Because that's a category that can be, seem simple to predict, but sometimes will be just all over the place.
Yeah.
And I think there is actually a lot more contenders than people think.
Yeah.
I'll really be pulling for her. The costumes in that are really distinctive and really interesting and not at all like normal costume design, so which I know makes it a tough sell, but
mm-hmm. Yeah,
I mean, there's a reason that you come out talking about those pants.
Yeah.
But I feel like it's so outgunned by these movies with so many costumes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know.
The award for most costumes is going to be
very tight this year, yeah.
Yeah, like...
Most costumes.
I think, yeah, just between, like, Hustle and Wall Street and The Butler alone, like, those three to me seem to, like... And I mean, obviously, like, I feel like 12 Years a Slave will probably show up as well.
I don't think Wolf of Wall Street is getting in. I know they love Sandy Powell, but it's not period enough, I don't think. It's so recent history. That's just my assumption.
No, that's true. That's a good point.
I think one thing that's funny about the costume designers is that unlike a lot of branches, they actually do seem to go see movies where the only hook is their craft.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I feel like something like The Invisible Woman, which is like born out its own title, since I can't even figure out how to see or if it's ever opening or what is happening.
January 10th is expansion. You'll probably get it in Chicago.
Oh, it's not listed on any theater.
Oh, really?
And the kinds of things that you would probably book it. So I hope so. I mean, I've heard good things about it all over, but that seems like a costume design pickup.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's actually a good point, Nick. I interviewed a couple of costume designers recently, and one of I did ask them about, you know, their voting and what they try to see.
Yeah.
And one of them actually mentioned that they were going to go see Romeo and Juliet.
Wow.
And I was just like, oh, wow. So even if something's really, like, panned, if they know it's costume heavy, that they do check it out.
Do you think Gatsby is for sure?
I do.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I'm always curious about the people who've never been nominated. Like, if, you know, what would push them over. So, like, Daniel Orlandi for Saving Mr. Banks, he's never been nominated, but that's very costumey.
God, Gatsby could end up with, like, four nominations.
Yeah.
Lana
Del Rey. Oh, no, she's not eligible. Or no, is she?
No, she is.
Oh, okay.
Now you are participating in that false campaign about it being ineligible. Don't spread lies, Katie.
I will not. I don't mean to be a tool, man.
And I think it would be really cool. Like, I know we should move away from costumes. I'm sorry, because you guys are already moving away. But Kurt and Bart, who did Stoker and Dallas Buyers Club this year. I think they're a really cool costuming team that have had a lot of like sudden interest in them.
They sound whimsical. Kurt and Bart.
Yeah. So they did, like, this year alone, they did Stoker, Dallas Buyers Club, and Out of the Furnace.
Ugh, Out of the Furnace. Not because of the costumes, but just... Ugh,
did you make it through that entire movie? It seemed like something like in the first scene, you're like, I'm out.
I kind of mentally checked out, although I stuck, like, I watched the whole thing, but oof, golly.
That's maybe...
Hey, masculinity, masculinity.
Yeah.
As well. Like, oh.
That's one of the few walkouts I considered this year. Like, I got to the halfway point of the movie and I was like, I know where this is going. I don't want to see it. Please let me leave. And
just that first scene at the drive-in theater, I was just like, got it. Got the whole thing.
Yep.
Got your entire world. Got
Midnight Meat Train.
I was like, one of you is going to get shot in that way that the bullet just enters your forehead like a punctuation point. And one of you will have brains on a window at one point. One of you will probably die in a field.
Man, you did
they
psyched
me out with the survival of well, I guess I shouldn't
spoiler
say.
Spoiler alert.
With one survival.
There's one person who lives that I thought for sure was going to be executed at some point, so that was amazing.
This is like a rare thing where all three of you have seen something that I have not seen a clip of, other than the trailer.
I'm going to tell you what Nick told me when I said I'd never seen Finding Neverland. Like, you were doing it correctly. You were fine.
How about best original score? One of my least favorite categories.
Wait, why? like this year or always?
No, always. Yeah.
Really? Why?
Just because I always find the nominees kind of. I mean, not always. Sometimes they come up with cool nominees, but it's just so. It's one of the most insular clubs in the Academy.
That is definitely true. That is absolutely
so.
True.
Like, nobody seems to love John Williams' score for The Book Thief, but he's absolutely going to be nominated.
Yeah.
Oh, The Book Thief. The movie makes me crazy.
And, like, I've heard weird, I'm not attuned enough to scoring in movies to really notice this very often, but a lot of people are complaining about Hans Zimmer for 12 Years a Slave.
I disagree.
I loved that score, but what I've kept hearing is that it's basically just like some other score, I forget which one.
It borrows a lot from his Thin Red Line score.
Yeah.
I like that about Hans Zimmer, though, and I know that, like, I don't. If people don't agree with that sentiment, I'm fine with it. Like, I think it's a taste thing. But I like when I can tell who's scoring something just by, like, listening. Like, that. I feel like that's part of my reason why I've never – haven't been able to really, like, latch onto Alexandre Desplat as much. Mm-hmm. Because
he's shapeshifted so much?
He's such a shapeshifter, and that's wonderful. And I like individual scores, but, like, I don't know. I feel like there's this kind of – through line with Hans Zimmer's stuff, and I know sometimes it starts to seem like a parody of himself, but I think in 12 Years a Slave, I think he sort of latches on to that kind of through line in ways that enhances the movie, and then the movie sort of, like, I don't know, enhances him. I really like it. Mm-hmm. Same way with Thomas Newman. Like, Thomas Newman stuff sounds like Thomas Newman, and I'm fine with it.
Yeah, but his score for Saving Mr. Banks is not good.
Well, yeah. I mean,
on top of which, like, I'm kind of with Nathaniel that I think this is the easiest category to wind up as a 9-time nominee.
Yeah.
Really having the kind of
filmography that supports that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure this is the category that I'm at my absolute basement of knowing anything about how to judge a score, and I also forget, like, when I'm watching a movie and I think, oh, this score is really interesting, I'm guaranteed to forget that even a week later. I just don't retain them. Mm-hmm. I don't recognize them in trailers like you guys all seem to do. Like, I'm just blocked.
I always have to, like, I always have to go to Twitter and be like, I know what this is, someone please tell me. Or then, like, at the end of Captain Phillips, when it just uses a piece from a completely different Hans Zimmer movie, like, it just uses, I can't remember which one it is, but it's very directly taken from something else. That was very strange.
Yeah, I mean, I only rarely notice, like, oh, I've heard this before, when it's actually an original score. if it's, like, something that I've seen really often, like, this is an odd story, but when we were doing the SmackDown for the year of The Heart is the Lonely Hunter, we were watching that movie, and I was like, God, the score sounds so familiar. And the boyfriend's like, oh, it's Steel Magnolias. And so, like, as soon as it ended, we put in Steel Magnolias, and it sounded so exactly the same. It was a total freak-out moment.
Yeah,
if you don't start paying attention during Steel Magnolias, we have a problem. How many more chances do you need?
Yeah, and the other thing that I've noticed that on, that I really hate, is the Dexter opening theme on television is totally Danny Elfman's Catwoman theme.
Oh, funny. Oh,
weird.
I'll have to go back
very,
and check that
out. Very,
very
similar to it.
That's funny, wow.
Yeah.
Nice.
You watched Catwoman? Oh, it's a theme for Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yes, yes.
Okay, sorry.
Which, of course, you would have memorized.
Yeah.
Which you would probably rename that movie Catwoman if it were up to you. I get
for
it.
Sure. Yeah. Instead of Batman Returns, Catwoman Enters.
Catwoman. Yeah.
Michelle Pfeiffer's Catwoman.
Or just meow.
This may just be the podcast of me being the cheerleader for her, but do you guys think there's any chance for the Arcade Fire score for that? Because it's so good.
I feel like they tend to go against popular music acts,
yeah,
though, right?
No,
they
I
do,
know.
Except for
like
that.
Trent Reznor was the exception. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know, because I mean, if we're going along that route, like, I like the Arcade Fire score for her. I like the M83 score for Oblivion, even though Oblivion is terrible.
Ooh,
like,
I did not like that score at all. And I was
really?
I was so excited for it. It felt so generic.
Oh, I don't know. I really liked it. I really thought it was good.
The score that I think is going to win that I don't actually like is Gravity.
Wow, you just don't like a lot about Gravity, huh?
I know. It's just like, but it's not that I don't like the score. I mean, like, Stephen Price is like a good score. It's just that I object to it being there. So it's like this weird, like, how do you judge something when you wish it didn't exist?
I feel like that is a problem in original score a lot, in that something can be a beautiful piece of music and yet you don't like the way it was used in the movie. Mm-hmm. And that ultimately is a directorial decision. And
right.
I don't know, I find that interesting. Like, how does one judge? I'm not sure if there is a right or wrong way.
Well, and another example of this is, like, Alexander Desplat's score for Cherie. I don't know if you guys remember that movie with Michelle Pfeiffer.
I remember that movie.
You are so incorrigible. Amazing.
No, but, like, that's an example of something that I noticed in that when I was watching the movie, it really bugged the shit out of me. And then I heard it later, and I was, and I was just like, this score is really good. And so, like, I was watching it again. Fancy that. And I realize, oh, it's not the score I don't like, it's the sound mixing. Because it makes the score so, so prominent that you just can't breathe. It's just like all score all the time.
Yeah.
Well, score and hats.
Yeah, right. Mostly hats.
Foreign film. Any feelings about there? I don't think we've discussed since the finalists were announced.
Oh, that...
Have we?
I don't think we have.
Twitter. Yeah, probably
I'm
not.
So bummed about Gloria, you guys.
I am, too. I really thought that was a sure thing because it's just so delightful and not undeep.
Not undeep.
Nathaniel, I assume you've seen more of these than anybody else.
You would probably assume wrong.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I haven't had time this year.
I have seen two, which is...
I've seen one.
I've seen four, I have Broken Circle Breakdown here for a fifth. Sometime this week.
I do too. I've been planning to watch it soon.
I've seen four of the nine. I have the screener for The Great Beauty, but I haven't watched it yet.
Did you like it, Katie? I've heard things all over the map.
I really liked it.
Which one?
The Great Beauty. I watched it yesterday because Joe was like, can I borrow your screener? And I was like, I should probably watch it before I lend it to you. And I enjoyed it immensely. So.
You're not supposed to say you lend out your screeners.
Oh, I'm sorry. I invited Joe to my house to watch it within my presence, and I cut it into pieces afterwards.
She was referring to a projectionist.
The Great Beauty.
Who works for her, who's
who
now going to go to Joe's house.
At her private screening room.
And show the same DVD for Joe.
Exactly.
She's going to display it publicly in clear violation.
Publicly in my living room. I've seen The Great Beauty and The Grandmaster. That's it.
I really don't like The Hunt, and I'm kind of law-ish on The Notebook, although it ended in a way that made me think there was more to think about than I had thought up till then. Mm-hmm. But I'm way out in front on Missing Picture out of the four that I've seen. Like, way, way. But I don't think it's going to qualify.
I've seen Broken Circle Breakdown, The Hunt, The Grandmaster, and The Missing Picture. And I liked all of them. I actually liked The Hunt, although I don't quite get why people love it. Because I do think it has some problems. But yeah, The Missing Picture is definitely the best of the four that I've seen.
Everyone I have talked to who saw Broken Circle Breakdown just says they wept through the whole thing.
Is there
anything to it other than weeping through the whole thing?
Well, the music is sensational.
Okay.
It's like second only to Inside Llewyn Davis.
All right. That seems like good enough reason to see it.
Yeah.
Nathaniel, you're predicting Germany to be nominated, and that's the movie I've literally heard nothing about.
Yeah, they really like German films, and they it's got actors that they like in it, and it involves World War II, and you know, it's just like there's just a lot of things. I think
all the ingredients are there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Got it.
I mean, and Liv Ullmann, it'll be nice if, you know, people notice her again.
If she wins an honorary Oscar. Is that what you said?
Yes.
I like that episode in the life of an iron picker, 74 minutes. That can only help as it tries to get people to watch it.
Yes.
I've literally never heard of that one before.
It played in Toronto, and I did try to see it there. And you'd think I could have found time since it's only 74 minutes. So I'm not sure what my problem was.
It was constantly up against... Like, it had really inopportune screening times, I think. But it showed at Berlin, too. That's where it debuted. And people really liked it.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't really a No Man's Land freak.
Yeah.
But I've been curious to see more of his stuff.
I'm just curious if The Missing Picture is nominated, depending on how you categorize Waltz with Bashir, it would be the first or the second documentary ever nominated in the category. Just because they are eligible, and submitted every year, but they almost never happen.
It's also in that weird space where it is eligible for Best Picture. It's on the eligibility list for all the Oscar categories,
yes.
But it didn't actually open commercially in New York ever. It just had one of those...
Los Angeles qualifying ones.
Yes.
Yeah. Supposedly it's coming out soon.
I think in February.
Yeah.
Go see it, everybody.
It's very good. Very good. Even if you don't love it, it's so distinctive that you should be glad that you saw it. That makes sense. Did you guys notice that the National Society of Film Critics did not give an animation award this year?
No.
Or do they ever? Or were they just making a statement?
They're just mad about Despicable Me 2.
It was their anti-Croods gesture.
Well, for all that I bitched about that category this year, now that I've seen, you know, some more of the nominations, I have to admit that I really, really like three of the things that are probably going to get nominated. Frozen, The Wind Rises, and Ernest and Celestine.
Mm.
Ernest and Celestine is just delightful.
I kind of really liked Monsters University, I have to say, surprisingly enough.
I feel fine about that movie. I've kind of forgot that I ever saw it.
It was a little bit liberating, kind of getting out from under the sort of prestige Pixar thumb. And I don't know, it just felt kind of like loose.
Any things you're dying to discuss before the Oscar nominations? Because, you know, this will instantly be rendered fish wrap, as they say, about newspapers that are that are also now extinct.
I feel like this is the best documentary field we've seen in quite a while.
Yeah.
And I really hope the five nominees reflect that. And I feel like there's probably a couple ways where the ultimate nominees could end up being a little bit of a letdown from some of the really interesting and original stuff. But so long as there is some combination of Act of Killing, Stories We Tell, 20 Feet from Stardom up there, I will be very happy, and I have a feeling those three probably will.
Yeah.
I think Blackfish is a done deal.
I think Blackfish is definitely in, too. So long as, like, Dirty Wars doesn't end up replacing, like, Stories We Tell or something like that, I will be happy.
I see your Nemesis Bridegroom in there.
Oh, did it make the shortlist?
No, it didn't.
Oh, it didn't? Oh, I'm looking at an old list then. Okay, good.
Yeah, there's only 15 remaining that could be nominees.
I would like to not see the Armstrong Lie nominated, which is bad of me because I haven't seen the movie, but just can get away from him? That's okay, so I'm done.
Yeah.
But, there are a lot of really interesting ones in here. I like Kitty and the Boxer, which you can rent on Amazon Instant, is a really
cool... I think
it's
on Netflix, too.
Is it also?
I liked it.
Yeah.
Kitty and the Boxer. The boyfriend was watching, you know, a bunch of the screeners the other day. He despised, I mean, he was angry. I thought he was going to start throwing things. Tim's Vermeer.
Oh.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because he's an art historian and he works in, you know, with museums and all this. And he just found it so, like, the whole thesis so, you know, vomitous, for lack of a better word. Like, he was extremely angry the whole time.
I what was is, just, I was surprised watching that, like, how much it just felt like a Discovery Channel special, which didn't make it any less interesting, but it didn't, it looks like crap half the time, which I thought was really strange for a movie about artistic perfection.
What is the extent of Penn and Teller's participation in that movie?
Teller directed it. Or no, Penn. Which one? One of them, the silent one directed it.
Oh.
And the other one appears on camera, and they're, like, friends with the guy who's the subject of the movie.
Okay, because they're obnoxious to me, and I feel like that would probably affect my enjoyment of the movie.
I want Ian McKellen to be the presenter if Pussy Riot is nominated. I think I'll have the most fun saying that.
Get on that.
I kind of was throwing things at Blackfish. I just can't stand it.
Yeah, you really hated it, huh?
I really hated it. Like, both on the, like...
People either seem to, like, worship it or hate it.
Yeah. I feel like this has become the lightning rod for the documentaries should be more than just documentaries debate this year. I feel like if that's not what Scott Tobias was talking about specifically when he wrote that article, like, at the very least...
What did he say?
Yeah, just basically that documentaries have gotten a free pass for being... not cinematic.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think what you were saying, how like the movies in general are pretty strong, which makes this interesting. I also think it's interesting there are so many really divisive ones that have made it this far into the semifinalist list. Like, this Act of Killing enrages a lot of people, and Katie, you've mentioned a few times how God Loves Uganda you think is really the shorter end of the stick compared to Kwame Kuchu.
But no one saw that movie, so it doesn't surprise me that Uganda. It drives me crazy, but I don't know. Like, there's like 10 of us.
I know, I'm one of them. It's fine.
Oh, good.
But yeah, I liked it too. But and I haven't seen God Loves Uganda, but Blackfish just seemed really to trip up on the, like, it's terrible to abuse animals and animals are the equal of humans, and the way you know animal abuse is bad is because sometimes they kill humans. Like, well, no, it's actually bad before they do that, and also you'd stop showing me murders in slow-mo. Like, this is gross. Like,
yeah.
And then repeating them, and then repeating them. And that felt like a real, like, people say this about fiction films all the time, kind of getting off on the thing it pretends to condemn, but that movie did everything you could do, including portentous music under slow-mo close-ups of the evil fish, to do exactly all the things it said it wasn't doing. Like, I'm done. Sorry. Now it I'm going to get eaten by Tillicum.
It is weird that that has become the cause to let. Like, it's like The Cove a couple years ago. Like, there's just, like, the one movie that everyone's like, this is an outrage, we must care about this.
Yeah.
Which I guess is easier than, like, watching The Act of Killing and being like, well, murder is very interesting when it's institutionalized. You know, like, it's a much easier message to wrap your head around and get enraged about.
Right. I will say this. Mary Clayton was in a Jeopardy clue the other day, so I feel like 20 Feet from Stardom did its job as that's as social activism right there. Like, it got it. It got her name into a Jeopardy clue. So
love 20 Feet from Stardom.
God, I just adored it, start to finish. Maybe the best time I had at a movie all year.
Wow.
And I mean, it's...
I just watched it because of you.
Oh, well, I'm glad. I'm glad I had that effect on people.
I can't say that I was as taken with it, but I did think it was...
It's not breaking any barriers cinematically, but God, it's just such a wonderful story and such wonderful interview subjects. And
I think my thing with documentaries and one of the reasons I don't watch them very much is, like, the format of them kind of bores me. Like, you know, even the really acclaimed ones are usually, you know, some form of talking head.
Mm-hmm.
And I see that on TV every time I watch anything, you know? So I think that might be one reason why I can't really get into them. Or that when I actually do see them, I'm usually drawn to the stuff that's, like, pushing the form. Like, I thought Stories We Tell was fascinating.
Yeah.
And a few years back, a very disturbing, but I thought that Zoo movie was really interesting. Just because it wasn't just doing, here's the camera in someone's face, you know?
I don't know what to quite do with the fact that that doesn't bother me. That I'm completely okay with a talking head documentary.
No, I mean, it's fine. It's just, I'm just saying, like, for me, maybe that's why I don't care about them.
Yeah. No, I mean, I get it. I get why, like, you know, the medium of film should be you know, advanced if you're making a movie. But like, for some reason, like a really, really compelling journalistic documentary to me fascinates me and is sufficient for me. And I mean, maybe I'm just sort of being, you know, artistically wishy-washy, but like, which is why something like Dirty Wars really bugged me, because it was just sort of like, it could not get out of its own way to just like, just be journalistic, just like present your case in like the most compelling way. And like, don't
what
have to like
doing that. Got it.
Was, it was, it's one of those movies that sort of, its narrator is its star and sort of kept like inserting itself within the story. And there was a lot of like, well, when I set out to, you know, discover this for myself and here's what happened to me. And these are the threatening letters that I got and blah, 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 blah. And it's just, it was, it, it kept inserting this guy into,
I see.
You know what I mean? Like, it's a big enough story as it is. Like,
we don't need Al Gore rolling his suitcase, looking contemplative.
Like, yeah, yeah.
Yes, right. I see that this movie's about Al Gore.
Well, thanks for joining us for this podcast about the upcoming Oscar nominations. We're sort of all over the place. So one thing I want to ask you guys as we depart, there'll be a little break from the podcast because things are so crazy in January with festivals and award shows and all of that. We're all very tightly booked. Who would you, as your exit question, who would you be taking to the red carpet for if you were invited to all these award shows?
Like who I actually know, or
no, either
just
one.
Who is like, who is my choice?
Who's either one. Just have fun with it.
I mean, Jennifer Lawrence is better at red carpets than anybody else, so she can just go talk to the cameras while I get to gawk at everybody else around and don't have to talk to Ryan Seacrest. I feel like that's a win-win.
I mean, I would take Derek anyway, like, but I also would take him because he would walk up to Jennifer Lawrence and be like, you were in Pretty Woman, is that right? Or, and he would have no idea what any of these movies are, and he would say that. What movie are you in? I was in The Wolf of Wall Street. I have no idea what that is. And I think that would be amazing. Have you really been in anything since Titanic, though? Like, it feels like I've never heard of you in other movies. Awesome.
It sounds like a Billy on the Street segment, but authentic.
Oh, right. Don't even get him started. I would just tell him in his ear, like, that guy's related to George Bush. And that would be the best Billy Bush segment anybody ever
did. Well, now that we've all started talking about Sharon Stone, the only thing I can think of is her Komodo dragon husband guy who...
You're going to dig up Phil Bronstein and take him to something?
And just like, just so I can remember that SNL sketch where Gwyneth Paltrow played Sharon Stone and this is my husband, isn't he creepy? And then Sharon Stone like wrote a letter in Entertainment Weekly like dissing Gwyneth about it, and it was a whole thing.
I don't remember this at all.
Oh god, I'll send you links. It was great.
I love this arcane trivia we get on the podcast.
Yeah.
One man's arcane trivia is another person's religious scroll. And that is how I would refer to Sharon Stone saying in print, when you look at Gwyneth, don't you feel like she doesn't quite get enough oxygen?
That's what referring to. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, so good.
This is bringing us right back to our intro game about couples.
I know.
Full circle.
Although Sharon Stone never won an Oscar, so we can't couple her with anyone.
Don't tell her.
Although I think spiritual siblings in Oscar winning in their year, Renee Zellweger and Tim Robbins.
Ew!
probably the two most hated Oscar winning performances of the past decade.
That is literally so gross that you just said that. Well, now we have to end because this is the end.
Killed everything.
But I'm going to say who I would bring. Sally Hawkins. Because I just met her, and she was fabulous and really funny, and because of how she behaved at the Golden Globes, I feel like that would distract from how verklempt I would be in a room full of all the celebrities.
How she behaved at the Golden Globes makes it sound like she like stood up on top of the table and put a lampshade on her head or something like that. Which is really...
That's actually standard Globes behavior. I think it's anything else.
No, but you know what I mean.
Let's just spread that rumor, though, that Sally Hawkins threw a smaller person against a Velcro target. And that's why she wasn't nominated for the Oscar.
That night got wild at the Globes, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
Oh, can I change my answer to Shirley MacLaine, Reese Witherspoon, and Ryan Phillippe? Because that's really my answer to
No, because you said
But that's your answer to everything, Jeff.
It really is, but it should be my answer to everything. Because
you get all three?
I get all three.
Cannot backpedal from Phil Bronstein.
Wait, if we get three, I'm taking Julianne Moore, Meryl Streep, and Nicole Kidman.
That is the right call as well. You're making right decisions. Very good.
Thanks for joining us. Happy Oscar nomination.
Happy Oscars,
morning.
Everybody.
Yeah, enjoy everybody.
And by the way, if you guys ever go to the awards, we're bringing us.
Yes.
That's you get true. Four.
Yes.
That's true. If I actually were to take three people.
Aww. Oh. Okay. Too late. You said the hours.
Also, I changed my mind. I'm taking Don Gummer.
Yes, you are. And you're taking him first so he doesn't get played out with the band.
Well, I'm going to take Grace and Mamie then.
Mm.
Wow.
I bet they're fun.
Well, maybe.
Still taking Derek. I'm not having that fight.
But wouldn't it all be lost on him, Nick?
Well, he could finally rekindle his college friendship with Jennifer Garner, which I've been urging him to do for 11 years.
Yeah, honestly.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Have fun
Bye.
On your various trips.
Yeah, enjoy Sundance. I'm jealous.
Enjoy
Thank
your Jets.
I'm going to be so sad that Katie's not with me this time.
I'm trying not to think too much about it. Although I've been so spoiled by going for 4 years that, like, to complain is monstrous, so yes, enjoy and keep me posted on all the great stuff that's there. I hope it's great stuff. It looks good.
I'll send you vines of my feet walking through the snow.
I've been wearing my snow boots the last few days. It feels very Sundancey.
Bye. All right,
bye guys.
Bye.